This is your host, Webster Thompson, here in Washington, D.C. We've got a very full program today. We've got the Obama regime bankrupting Chrysler and General Motors in order to bust the United Auto Workers and extend the rule of the fascist corporate estate. And we've got all kinds of developments in the banking sector. We're recording this on the afternoon, the Friday afternoon, when the stress test is going to be at least made public, the criteria or guidelines, the actual content of the stress test on these big banks is relegated to the first week in May. But the most interesting thing is we've just had an alarm here in the Washington, D.C. airspace, and that is ominous. We've had some kind of a small plane, no details yet, blundering into the no-fly zone, the zone of exclusion over Washington, D.C., and various kinds of alarms going off in the Congress and the White House. Maybe we'll have more details on that later in the program. It's also interesting because this is the IMF, International Monetary Fund, spring meeting here in the Capitol with the G7 meeting this afternoon at the Treasury under the chairmanship of Tiny Tim, the tax cheat, who is now looking over his 19 zombie banks. That's the stress test. But the alarm in the airspace forces us to return our attention to the question of false flag operations. And this is very much now in the wind. Let me just remind you what an alert over Washington, D.C. is likely to foreshadow. Here I'm going back to the classic source, 9/11 synthetic terror made in USA, which you can get at Amazon.com. Let's look at events occurring in the spring of 2005. On May 11th, 2005, a small plane almost reached the White House before it was turned away. The Congress, the Supreme Court, the White House, and other executive departments were evacuated amid scenes of panic. The White House went on red alert, but not Bush. Bush was not informed until it was all over. He was riding his bicycle in the woods near Greenbelt, Maryland. And as these planes approached the Capitol and the White House from the northeast, flares were dropped over the Brooklyn district of northeast D.C., dropped over Tacoma Park, Maryland. And that was one event. Then on the 18th of May, a live hand grenade landed near Bush as he spoke at a rally in Tiflis, Georgia. And then on the 29th of June, 2005, another small plane led to the evacuation of the Congress and Capitol again amidst scenes of panic. And then on July 2nd, three small planes came close to Bush's Camp David retreat in the Catoctin Mountains of Maryland. Well, what did all that build up to? Well, the London July 5th bombings, the London July 7th bombings, which were associated with the big international conference at Glen Eagle, Scotland on July 5th. That was when Bush crashed into a policeman while riding on his bicycle. So now we've got we may have a kind of a collapsed scenario going on here, that the violation of the airspace occurs at the same time that the big international conference, that is to say the spring meeting of the International Monetary Fund, and that is the World Bank, by the way. They also meet the Bank of the World. That's it. That's them. The International Monetary Fund with their trademark special drawing rights. This is now meeting in Washington, D.C., so I think it's time to go to orange alert at the very least, orange alert for false flag. And, of course, the ruling class believes that in sharp contrast to the discredited and hated neocons, Bush and Cheney, that the telegenic face of Obama and his regime in the world will be able to convincingly argue that some rogue state or rogue network has attacked the United States. And, of course, in reality, these things are the product of the intelligence community of the Western world and of the United States in particular. Let's also point to the fact that we've got Pakistan collapsing. This is the direct fruit of the U.S.-British policy. There was a relatively stronger government under Musharraf. They sent in Benazir Bhutto, who was then liquidated as a means of getting rid of Musharraf, a huge hysterical campaign by the British and the U.S. in 2007, 2008, until the point that Musharraf was driven out. And now we've got the policy of the Obama policy of reckless and unilateral bombing of northwest Pakistan, the so-called Waziristan, or federally administered tribal areas. This goes on now every day of the week. We have large killings, large butcher's bill in that part of the world. And, of course, that's a total humiliation of the Pakistan government, because in public the Pakistan government says they're against it, even though in private they collude and actually assist the policy. So they're caught in a terrible situation. And, of course, the goal of all this, as we've repeatedly said on the program, is to break up Pakistan, to destroy Pakistan as a nation, not just to have a puppet government, because that they already have. They've got Zardari, the widow of Benazir Bhutto. Zardari, Mr. 10% or 15% or whatever he gets these days, a weak prime minister in the form of Gilani, who takes these promises from Bush and then from Obama, gets nothing for it. And, of course, the goal here is to destroy the Pakistan energy corridor from the port of Gwadar near Iran on the Arabian Sea, close to Hormuz and the Persian Gulf. It's clear that you could have oil pipelines and natural gas pipelines coming from Iran and indeed from other countries in the Middle East and going across Pakistan and into China above Kashmir, thus avoiding the world ocean controlled by the Anglo-American fleets, so that the Chinese would get guaranteed land-based access to Middle East oil and natural gas. This is the imperative that the U.S. and the British are acting on, to bust up Pakistan, to destroy it as a country, instead of one country under whatever puppet government we now have. It becomes Pakistan under the domination of four or five different governments. In other words, the government of Sindh, the government of Balochistan, the government of Pashtunistan, the government of other areas, four to five fault lines in Pakistan. The thing that the Anglo-Americans, of course, forgot to factor in is that the Pakistan energy corridor is also the supply line for the NATO invasion force, the U.S. NATO invasion force, inside Afghanistan. And we've had some pretty dramatic attacks in the past week on petroleum transport, in other words, on tank trucks filled with gasoline and fuel for the invading army up there in the mountains of Afghanistan, big attacks between Peshawar and the Khyber Pass, an attack in particular on a parking lot filled with tank trucks, spectacular flames, a lot of photographs. You can see this all over the place. And now the word, of course, from the controlled Wall Street media is that the Pakistani state is breaking up. This, of course, associated with the 50 to 60 nuclear weapons thought to be there. False flag back in the air. We'll be back in a minute.
Cascadia Public Radio.
to World Crisis Radio, Webster Troppe reporting from Washington, D.C., pointing once again to a new flare-up of false flag operation danger. Time for orange alert on false flag and ready to escalate to higher levels of vigilance. The question is, Pakistan, big hysteria about Pakistan, of course. If Pakistan breaks up, this is the direct fruit of the Anglo-American policy, which ousted Musharraf, replaced him with the pathetically weak, corrupt Zardari, the widower of Benazir Bhutto, but Mr. 15% or whatever he gets. And we're told now that the Pakistani nuclear forces are in danger of being seized by the Taliban. This is the hysterical conclusion of the Wall Street-controlled media, and there is a build-up around this. British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC TV, direct branch of MI6, British Intelligence, had a program about new dangers of nuclear terrorism. And here we had Congressman Romer. You'll all remember Congressman Romer from the fake 9/11 commission, the Kane-Hamilton commission that purported to look into 9/11, and the cover-up commission, the mockery of an investigation, remember, run by Philip Zelikow some years back. This Congressman Romer comes on the BBC and says it is basically guaranteed that in the next 5 years there will be a nuclear terrorism attack, be it an actual nuclear detonation or a dirty bomb. So if we put this all together, again, we've had this alarm in the airspace over the Capitol. Let's just go back to events of approximately, 4 years ago. The London explosions on July 7th of 2005, the 7-7 blasts there in London, obviously extremely suspicious, have a false flag written all over them. But the prelude to that was May 11th, small plane almost reaches the White House, all the government evacuated, flares dropped over Brooklyn and Tacoma Park, Maryland. That was May 11th, 2005. May 18th, that incident where a hand grenade got close to Bush at a rally in Tiflis, Georgia. June 29th, another small plane approaches Congress in the Capitol. Scenes of panic. The afternoon of July 2nd, three small planes approach Bush's Camp David retreat in the Catoctin Mountains. And that one was lucky to get in the local news pages of the Washington Post. And, of course, the London 7-7 was keyed to go with the July 5th Glenn Eagles meeting of what? Of the Group of Seven. That was, of course, the Group of Seven heads of state, heads of government. That's not quite what we have here in Washington over the weekend, but we do have the finance ministers of the Group of Seven meeting in the Treasury Department at the same time that the alarm goes off. Remember also that I believe in the Memorial Day of 2006, we had another such incident where an unidentified small plane, I believe belonging to a governor of a state, approached Washington, D.C. But the big thing is that the build-up to London 7-7 2005 included these incidents over Washington, D.C. And that, of course, this is all inherent in the coming of the Obama regime. Now, the economic front, of course, extremely hot. Chrysler is now on the verge of bankruptcy. Chrysler has until the end of April to come up with some solution. And, of course, since the zombie banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citibank, Wells Fargo, Bank of New York Mellon, those are zombie banks. They do derivatives. They do proprietary trading to get the price of oil up. They don't lend for plant and equipment. So we can assume that Chrysler will now be forced into bankruptcy and that General Motors is not far behind. What it means is that the Obama regime, totally controlled by Wall Street parasites, is presiding over the destruction of much, the vast majority of what remains of productive industry, productive assembly lines, productive tool and die, machine tool capabilities in North America, because this includes Canada, and it even includes Mexico in many ways. The entire U.S. auto industry is being systematically demolished. It's démontage. It's what the Soviets did in East Germany, right? Except they took it to use it. In this case, it's going to be destroyed. It reminds us of the destruction of the U.S. steel industry under Paul Adolf Volcker back in the 1980s. And sure enough, the same Paul Adolf Volcker is sitting in the White House helping to run this show. General Motors has told the United Auto Workers of Canada that they have got to give wage concessions to bring their levels of compensation down to the levels of the Deep South, Alabama, Mississippi, the right-to-work union-busting states where foreign owners, German and other Japanese foreign owners, have come in to build runaway shops, getting away from their own unions and getting away from the U.S. unions. They've built those in the southern states, and, of course, they give a very modest wage and a modest benefits package. The UAW workers of Canada, the Canadian UAW, now a separate group, have been told that they will have to make wage concessions along the same lines. Now, who is doing this? Who is presiding over the destruction of Chrysler and General Motors? Of course, Ford. Ford has just said Ford had a $1.4 billion loss in the last quarter. Wall Street is celebrating that, saying it's not that bad. It's better than we thought. We're also told that Chrysler could have had $800 million to tide them over, but Nardelli and the rest of the Wall Street hedge fund boys from Cerberus Hedge Fund decided to decline that. It's almost $1 billion of additional aid for Chrysler because it would have limited their looting of the company, specifically their executive compensation packages. So what this shows, again, is the imperative. Chrysler is the classic example. Nationalize Chrysler. Nationalize them immediately. Get those hedge fund hyenas out of there. Get Nardelli and Cerberus Fund off the case. Get them out of there and put it under the control of a competent industrial engineer and get busy reconverting Chrysler for the production of airframes, for the space program, nuclear reactors, tractors, and equipment for maglev, rail, and urban mass transit. There are plenty of things we need here in the U.S. We cannot allow Chrysler to become a group of empty factories standing idle and unemployed workers. And, of course, we're also told the Washington Post today, that is today, Friday, the 24th of April, has a whole thing about how if these companies go bankrupt, it's going to be the retired auto workers who take the hit. And the taxpayer, of course, will take the hit under Barkey's regime, because what Barkey will do is, as he busts the union, the pension fund will go under the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, a federal government agency, which will then preside over cuts in the health care and pensions of these retired workers. We'll be back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. Now, Chrysler, if Chrysler is to survive, it's because it's going to come under the control of Fiat. Well, the center of Fiat, of course, is Turin, Italy. That is to say, the northeast corner of Italy, Piedmont, circled by the Alps. Beautiful place, great city. However, the management of Fiat are total degenerates. And indeed, if you lived in Turin, as I did for a year, you found that the entire working class of Turin was mobilized against the Fiat management because they are a gang of degenerates. In those days, it was Gianni Agnelli, the family that owns Fiat. This guy, he was a member of the International Jet Set, right, with Porfirio, Ruby Rosa, and the Aga Khan and so forth back in the 1950s. And the story was that he had indulged in cocaine to the point that he'd burned out the inside of his nostrils and had to replace it with some kind of a silver lining for his nostrils. So this was then going to be the person who made the great decisions for a large industrial Corporation. They had a competent management in the form of Valletta, even though he was a brute when it came to the unions. But then it just simply became a group of a blasé cafe society jet set degenerates. So the Fiat management is incompetent, and their anti-union, union-busting, wage-gouging proclivities are just too famous to be ignored. So what kind of a future is that? Chrysler must be nationalized immediately. Get rid of Nardelli. Get rid of the hedge fund hyenas. Get Cerberus out of there if they're trying to loot the place, which is what they're doing. And do the same thing for General Motors. Those assembly lines must be saved. Without those assembly lines, the U.S. becomes indefensible. It becomes a banana republic. We've heard about banana republic. If you don't have an auto industry with some assembly lines going, you are a banana republic, whatever the political overtones look like. With that, it would essentially mark the destruction of the industrial base in the Midwest around the Great Lakes. The U.S. would then become a ravaged hulk, a pathetic wreck, a derelict floating on the waters of political adventure and world economic depression. It would be ripe for national collapse, and we've even got some other forms of hyenas coming around talking in those terms. Who's doing it? Who is superintending the destruction of General Motors and Chrysler? Steve Rattner, alias Rattner the Rat. Rattner of Quadrangle Hedge Fund is a former New York Times reporter. My God. He was a New York Times reporter, so he's a press whore. And now he is the head of Obama's auto task force. Could anything be more obscene? Could anything unveil better than this, the intellectual, moral, and political bankruptcy of the Obama regime, that they put a former New York Times reporter in charge of destroying these industries that have been built up by three, four, five generations of workers over the period of 100 years who, with trade union struggles, have gotten their living standard up to the point that they were able to lift the rest of the U.S. working class to decent levels. And Rattner the Rat, of course, is corrupt. Rattner the Rat should be in jail. Rattner the Rat has been exposed as being part of a pay-to-play scheme. Whatever was done to Blagojevich, and whatever it was, should be done to Rattner, because he's in the same league. And, of course, this is the entire clique around Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and the rest of them. It's the entire Democratic Party pay-to-play mafia. In the case of Rattner the Rat, it was a pension fund in the state of New York where Quadrangle Hedge Fund that he was running wanted to come in and loot it, and therefore they had to pay various kinds of fees to all kinds of interested parties. That's the guy. Rattner the Rat is presiding over the destruction of five generations of work to build up those assembly lines. And again, the Studebaker engines on the B-17 and all the rest of it, all of this stuff goes out the window if you don't have an automobile industry. We've already got record unemployment in terms of people receiving unemployment benefits, more than 6 million currently. The latest unemployment news, 640,000 new claims for unemployment. We've got 10% of the United States is now on food stamps, including 3 million in Texas. 10% of all homes are in foreclosure. And despite Obama's promises on foreclosure, and despite the money that the Obama regime is now paying out of the TARP to Countrywide, to the successors of gangster Angelo Mozzillo over there at Countrywide, there's been an 80% increase in foreclosures over recent months. How about that? So this is a world economic depression of unprecedented severity. It's a world depression, and in the middle of all this now, we get the stress test on the banks. Now, this is being announced even as we're recording the program. This is the report on what Geithner had promised, that the 19 top zombie banks would be subjected to a stress test. Now, the report we were getting about this is that the way they're doing it is the following. Geithner's goal is to feed the viable local and regional banks into the greedy jaws of J.P. Morgan Chase, first of all, but to some extent also Citibank and Bank of America. The model for this is what happened to Washington Mutual, WAMU. Last September, WAMU, a viable institution, was seized and delivered on a platter to Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan Chase. This was done by the corrupt and criminal Sheila Bair of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, who, by some strange coincidence, is still in power under Barkey. She has gone from Bush to Barkey in the same way that Gates and a few others have. So that's the story on WAMU. Now, what they want to do is do that now to other relatively viable regional and local banks. So the idea is that the stress test has been administered. It's very, very rough on the local regional banks and very, very soft on the big zombie banks, the top five, six zombie banks, money center banks. So we can expect that Geithner will attempt to break up the viable banks and feed them to the ones that are most bankrupt. In other words, here again, unfailingly, the Obama regime does the opposite of what would be rational, the opposite of what is conducive to human survival and the survival of civilization. And, of course, everything that Obama does is designed to exalt speculative, bubble economy, bloated, cancerous, fictitious, speculative values, rule the roost with Obama, the Wall Street puppet. Now, of course, the banks are claiming that they're in relatively good shape. Well, the reason for this is now the mark-to-market rule has been suspended, and the banks can now mark-to-model. That would be the Black-Scholes model for their derivatives. And, of course, with the Black-Scholes and related models used for valuation of derivatives, once you get to mark-to-model, you can cook it any way you want. In the background, there are people who are not fooled. These are speculators now. These are hyenas of a different type. They're not fooled by the bank profits. They know that the results announced by Bank of America and some others are basically a fraud. Same thing for Goldman Sachs and indeed Morgan Stanley, although their result was not so great. The point is that all of these institutions have issued bonds. And what's going on, with not very much publicity happening, is that there is massive shorting of the bonds, corporate bonds issued by these zombie banks. This is going on in the background. And as those zombie bank bonds are driven down by the process of shorting, it essentially reflects a conviction that a lot of these banks are eventually going to be seized by the federal government. And indeed, that's what should happen, but it should happen this afternoon. It's Friday afternoon, Sheila Bair. How come you haven't seized the zombie banks? Why are you breaking the law? We'll be back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Radio. This is Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. And let me take this opportunity to call your attention to the authoritative books on Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. First edition published 1 year ago this month in advance of the Pennsylvania primary, and the profile of Obama has been massively confirmed, unfortunately. And that is then supplemented by Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. Both of these, Obama the Postmodern Coup and Obama the Unauthorized Biography, two separate books with a completely different content, different emphasis, available from Amazon.com, having sold very well in Germany, very well in Japan, and an Italian edition in the works that will combine the best of both. And let me also urge you in terms of the false flag now, there's no doubt what happened on 9/11. If you want to know what happened on 9/11 in the time leading up to it, 9/11 synthetic terror made in USA from Amazon.com. And we're also got the imminent publication now on paper of Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History, which is largely based on a study I did of the U.S. and world economies in 1998, 1999, the snapshot taken then, I think unfailingly identified the causes of the current world economic depression, and that's then supplemented with a wealth of recent material that goes into how you get out of a depression right now. How you get deeper into the depression is the Geithner stress test. Again, the goal here is to feed the relatively viable regional banks to the totally bankrupt money center banks, especially the big three, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Bank of America. We can call this the fairy tale of Tiny Tim and the 19 zombies. Not exactly all of the 19 big banks that they're looking into are zombies, but the top 7, 8, 9, 10 certainly are. And I think the idea would be within that universe of the 19 larger banks that the Treasury is forcing to go through this procedure, the smaller and more viable ones, the ones that are less loaded with deadly derivatives, will be fed into the jaws and the maw of those who are less viable. So we've got the IMF meeting here this weekend, the G7 meeting today, the G20 meeting. Geithner is still pushing that locomotive theory, right? The old Carter Mondale locomotive theory, which says the U.S. is debasing the currency like mad. Europe has to do the same. Japan has to do the same. Nobody in Europe wants to do that. And, of course, everybody recognizes the one really effective recovery program that's going on is the Chinese one, because the Chinese one is based on real productive investment in tangible physical economic goods, not propping up speculative values, not trying to save zombie banks, but building things, building maglev, building rail, building healthcare, building hospitals in local communities. That's the Chinese one. That's a New Deal program, and it's going to be effective. And the degeneracy of the U.S. political system is reflected in the inability of the current regime, or indeed the opposition, to propose something along the lines of the Chinese program, which people in Wall Street basically know will work. They all say, oh, we're all hoping for China to lift the world out of depression, because the rest of this stuff basically won't work. Now, we've also got some scandals that are going on. We have the bankruptcy manager of AIG, the guy called Liddy, Ed Liddy, worked for Goldman Sachs. And, of course, then he was brought in as a dollar-a-year man to save AIG, well, to save it, to break up AIG, and in particular to neutralize that hedge fund that AIG had in London, which issued $3 trillion of derivatives, including credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, and the rest of it. And here you see the whole crisis in a microcosm. The roots of the crisis are hedge funds and derivatives. You want to get out of the crisis, ban hedge funds, outlaw derivatives, destroy the derivatives that exist, shut down the hedge funds that exist. You will be well on your way to getting out of the crisis if you can supplement that with some actual recovery policies. But what we find is that under the TARP, the AIG, of course, has received $160 billion with chits in for another $200 billion or so. Liddy is a former employee of Goldman Sachs, successfully convoyed between $10 and $15 billion of AIG bailout money to Goldman Sachs. So Goldman Sachs is cashing in all around. And you'll remember, of course, that Goldman Sachs, more than any other financial institution, financed Barkey's seizure of power. That is, the Obama presidential campaign received more through bundling at Goldman Sachs than any other bank or financial institution. We've also got a scandal at the Bank of America. This is actually funny. We've got Lewis. You'll remember Lewis. Ken Lewis, the head of Bank of America, zombie banker. And this is the aggressive apologist. He's the publicity man saying, we bank executives demand big money. We want our millions of dollars in compensation packages. Turns out that when Merrill Lynch was about to blow under Thain, that was last September, October, Merrill Lynch was about to blow up. Paulson, the Bush Secretary of the Treasury, Hanky Panky Paulson that we followed at the time, Hanky Panky was joined by helicopter Ben Bernanke, who is still at the Federal Reserve, and they told Lewis, Lewis, you know, you're going to absorb Merrill Lynch. Don't you dare tell your board or your shareholders or the public how bankrupt Merrill Lynch is, because you're going to take it and you're going to like it and you're going to shut up about it. So here we have an interesting scandal. The Paulson side, of course, is interesting, but the Bernanke side is even more interesting because Bernanke is in there. Time to impeach Bernanke. Time to impeach Bernanke. And, of course, the way to do it, we have to hope that all of the disgruntled shareholders of Bank of America who have been forced to eat the huge losses coming from Merrill Lynch and their derivatives, that those shareholders will take it out on Bernanke with lots and lots of lawsuits and other actions, publicity actions, that will begin to so besmirch the name of the Federal Reserve that the nationalization of the Federal Reserve will come into view, so that people like Bernanke will not be able to run wild. And generally, accountability for Paulson, accountability for Bernanke. And then, of course, once you've said the two of them, was Tiny Tim Geithner in the room at the time? Chances are he was. So there we have the panoply of financial events. And we're going into a depression. Let's just go through what should be done with auto. Again, nationalize General Motors, nationalize Chrysler. Kick out the hedge fund hyenas, the various Nardellis. Get rid of that Fritz Henderson. He's obviously a big step down from Wagoner. Wagoner was obviously ousted because he wanted to fight for some form of industrial capitalism in this country. Henderson is a yes man and tool of Obama, who's going to go along with anything. Get the hedge funds out of there. Get all the derivatives wiped out. Nationalize these companies. Put in competent industrial engineers. We can recommend some if they want to know the names of a few. Get in some people who have actually had experience in running large-scale industrial complexes like shipyards and things like this. Then what you've got to do, go back to the reconversion plans elaborated by the United Auto Workers in the decade after World War II, and look at the things that these companies, these assembly lines, could manufacture that are vitally needed. That would be space program equipment, nuclear reactors, tractors, maglev rail, local urban mass transit, things like this, and get them going producing those things. Give them all the debt moratorium and the derivatives wipe out in the meantime. We'll be back in a minute. Regime bankrupting Chrysler and General Motors in order to bust the United Auto Workers and extend the rule of the fascist corporate estate. And we've got all kinds of developments in the banking sector. We're recording this on the afternoon, the Friday afternoon, when the stress test is going to be at least made public. The criteria or guidelines, the actual content of the stress test on these big banks is relegated to the first week in May. But the most interesting thing is we've just had an alarm here in the Washington, D.C. airspace, and that is ominous. We've had some kind of a small plane, no details yet, blundering into the no-fly zone, the zone of exclusion over Washington, D.C., and various kinds of alarms going off in the Congress and the White House. Maybe we'll have more details on that later in the program. It's also interesting because this is the IMF, International Monetary Fund, spring meeting here in the Capitol with the G7 meeting this afternoon at the Treasury under the chairmanship of Tiny Tim, the tax cheat, who is now looking over his 19 zombie banks. That's the stress test. But the alarm in the airspace forces us to return our attention to the question of false flag operations. And this is very much now in the wind. Let me just remind you what an alert over Washington, D.C. is likely to foreshadow. Here I'm going back to the classic source, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, which you can get at Amazon.com. Let's look at events occurring in the spring of 2005. On May 11th, 2005, a small plane almost reached the White House before it was turned away. The Congress, the Supreme Court, the White House, and other executive departments were evacuated amid scenes of panic. The White House went on red alert, but not Bush. Bush was not informed until it was all over. He was riding his bicycle in the woods near Greenbelt, Maryland. And as these planes approached the Capitol and the White House from the northeast, flares were dropped over the Brookland District of Northeast D.C., dropped over Tacoma Park, Maryland. And that was one event. Then on the 18th of May, a live hand grenade landed near Bush as he spoke at a rally in Tiflis, Georgia. And then on the 29th of June, 2005, another small plane led to the evacuation of the Congress and Capitol again amidst scenes of panic. And then on July 2nd, three small planes came close to Bush's Camp David retreat in the Catoctin Mountains of Maryland. Well, what did all that build up to? Well, the London July 5th bombings, the London July 7th bombings, which were associated with the big international conference at Glen Eagle, Scotland on July 5th. That was when Bush crashed into a policeman while riding on his bicycle. So now we've got we may have a kind of a collapsed scenario going on here, that the violation of the airspace occurs at the same time that the big international conference, that is to say the spring meeting of the International Monetary Fund, and that is the World Bank, by the way. They also meet the Bank of the World. That's it. That's them. The International Monetary Fund with their trademark special drawing rights. This is now meeting in Washington, D.C., so I think it's time to go to orange alert at the very least, orange alert for false flag. And, of course, the ruling class believes that in sharp contrast to the discredited and hated neocons, Bush and Cheney, that the telegenic face of Obama and his regime in the world will be able to convincingly argue that some rogue state or rogue network has attacked the United States. And, of course, in reality, these things are the product of the intelligence community of the Western world and of the United States in particular. Let's also point to the fact that we've got Pakistan collapsing. This is the direct fruit of the U.S.-British policy. There was a relatively stronger government under Musharraf. They sent in Benazir Bhutto, who was then liquidated, as a means of getting rid of Musharraf, a huge hysterical campaign by the British and the U.S. in 2007, 2008, until the point that Musharraf was driven out. And now we've got the policy of the Obama policy of reckless and unilateral bombing of northwest Pakistan, the so-called Waziristan, or federally administered tribal areas. This goes on now every day of the week. We have large killings, large butcher's bill in that part of the world. And, of course, that's a total humiliation of the Pakistan government, because in public the Pakistan government says they're against it, even though in private they collude and actually assist the policy. So they're caught in a terrible situation. And, of course, the goal of all this, as we've repeatedly said on the program, is to break up Pakistan, to destroy Pakistan as a nation, not just to have a puppet government, because that they already have. They've got Zardari, the widow of Benazir Bhutto. Zardari, Mr. 10% or 15% or whatever he gets these days, a weak prime minister in the form of Gilani, who takes these promises from Bush and then from Obama, gets nothing for it. And, of course, the goal here is to destroy the Pakistan energy corridor from the port of Gwadar near Iran on the Arabian Sea, close to Hormuz and the Persian Gulf. It's clear that you could have oil pipelines and natural gas pipelines coming from Iran and indeed from other countries in the Middle East and going across Pakistan and into China above Kashmir, thus avoiding the world ocean controlled by the Anglo-American fleets, so that the Chinese would get guaranteed land-based access to Middle East oil and natural gas. This is the imperative that the U.S. and the British are acting on, to bust up Pakistan, to destroy it as a country, instead of one country under whatever puppet government we now have. It becomes Pakistan under the domination of four or five different governments. In other words, the government of Sindh, the government of Balochistan, the government of Pashtunistan, the government of other areas, four to five fault lines in Pakistan. The thing that the Anglo-Americans, of course, forgot to factor in is that the Pakistan energy corridor is also the supply line for the NATO invasion force, the U.S. NATO invasion force, inside Afghanistan. And we've had some pretty dramatic attacks in the past week on petroleum transport, in other words, on tank trucks filled with gasoline and fuel for the invading army up there in the mountains of Afghanistan. Big attacks between Peshawar and the Khyber Pass, an attack in particular on a parking lot filled with tank trucks, spectacular flames, a lot of photographs. You can see this all over the place. And now the word, of course, from the controlled Wall Street media is that the Pakistani state is breaking up. This, of course, associated with the 50 to 60 nuclear weapons thought to be there. False flag back in the air. We'll be back in a minute. Radio, Webster Topley reporting from Washington, D.C., pointing once again to a new flare-up of false flag operation danger. Time for orange alert on false flag, and ready to escalate to higher levels of vigilance. The question is, Pakistan, big hysteria about Pakistan, of course. If Pakistan breaks up, this is the direct fruit of the Anglo-American policy, which ousted Musharraf, replaced him with the pathetically weak, corrupt Zardari, the widower of Benazir Bhutto, but Mr. 15% or whatever he gets. And we're told now that the Pakistani nuclear forces are in danger of being seized by the Taliban. This is the hysterical conclusion of the Wall Street-controlled media, and there is a build-up around this. British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC TV, direct branch of MI6, British Intelligence, had a program about new dangers of nuclear terrorism. And here we had Congressman Romer. You'll all remember Congressman Romer from the fake 9/11 commission, the Hamilton, the Kane-Hamilton commission that purported to look into 9/11, and the cover-up commission, the mockery of an investigation, remember, run by Philip Zelikow some years back. This Congressman Romer comes on the BBC and says it is basically guaranteed that in the next 5 years there will be a nuclear terrorism attack, be it an actual nuclear detonation or a dirty bomb. So if we put this all together, again, we've had this alarm in the airspace over the Capitol. Let's just go back to events of approximately, 4 years ago. The London explosions on July 7th of 2005, the 7-7 blasts there in London, obviously extremely suspicious, have a false flag written all over them. But the prelude to that was May 11th, small plane almost reaches the White House, all the government evacuated, flares dropped over Brooklyn and Tacoma Park, Maryland. That was May 11th, 2005. May 18th, that incident where a hand grenade got close to Bush at a rally in Tiflis, Georgia. June 29th, another small plane approaches Congress in the Capitol. Scenes of panic. The afternoon of July 2nd, three small planes approach Bush's Camp David retreat in the Catoctin Mountains. And that one was lucky to get in the local news pages of the Washington Post. And, of course, the London 7-7 was keyed to go with the July 5th Glenn Eagles meeting of what? Of the Group of Seven. That was, of course, the Group of Seven heads of state, heads of government. That's not quite what we have here in Washington over the weekend, but we do have the finance ministers of the Group of Seven meeting in the Treasury Department at the same time that the alarm goes off. Remember also that I believe in the Memorial Day of 2006, we had another such incident where an unidentified small plane, I believe belonging to a governor of a state, approached Washington, D.C. But the big thing is that the build-up to London 7-7 2005 included these incidents over Washington, D.C. And that, of course, this is all inherent in the coming of the Obama regime. Now, the economic front, of course, extremely hot. Chrysler is now on the verge of bankruptcy. Chrysler has until the end of April to come up with some solution. And, of course, since the zombie banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citibank, Wells Fargo, Bank of New York Mellon, those are zombie banks. They do derivatives. They do proprietary trading to get the price of oil up. They don't lend for plant and equipment. So we can assume that Chrysler will now be forced into bankruptcy and that General Motors is not far behind. What it means is that the Obama regime, totally controlled by Wall Street parasites, is presiding over the destruction of much, the vast majority of what remains of productive industry, productive assembly lines, productive tool and die, machine tool capabilities in North America, because this includes Canada, and it even includes Mexico in many ways. The entire U.S. auto industry is being systematically demolished. It's démontage. It's what the Soviets did in East Germany, right? Except they took it to use it. In this case, it's going to be destroyed. It reminds us of the destruction of the U.S. steel industry under Paul Adolf Volcker back in the 1980s. And sure enough, the same Paul Adolf Volcker is sitting in the White House helping to run this show. General Motors has told the United Auto Workers of Canada that they have got to give wage concessions to bring their levels of compensation down to the levels of the Deep South, Alabama, Mississippi, the right-to-work union-busting states where foreign owners, German and other Japanese foreign owners, have come in to build runaway shops, getting away from their own unions and getting away from the U.S. unions. They've built those in the southern states, and, of course, they give a very modest wage and a modest benefits package. The UAW workers of Canada, the Canadian UAW, now a separate group, have been told that they will have to make wage concessions along the same lines. Now, who is doing this? Who is presiding over the destruction of Chrysler and General Motors? Of course, Ford. Ford has just said Ford had a $1.4 billion loss in the last quarter. Wall Street is celebrating that, saying it's not that bad. That's better than we thought. We're also told that Chrysler could have had $800 million to tide them over, but Nardelli and the rest of the Wall Street hedge fund boys from Cerberus Hedge Fund decided to decline that it's almost $1 billion of additional aid for Chrysler because it would have limited their looting of the company, specifically their executive compensation packages. So what this shows, again, is the imperative. Chrysler is the classic example. Nationalize Chrysler. Nationalize them immediately. Get those hedge fund hyenas out of there. Get Nardelli and Cerberus Fund off the case. Get them out of there and put it under the control of a competent industrial engineer and get busy reconverting Chrysler for the production of airframes, for the space program, nuclear reactors, tractors, and equipment for maglev, rail, and urban mass transit. There are plenty of things we need here in the U.S. We cannot allow Chrysler to become a group of empty factories standing idle and unemployed workers. And, of course, we're also told the Washington Post today, that is today, Friday, the 24th of April, has a whole thing about how if these companies go bankrupt, it's going to be the retired auto workers who take the hit. And the taxpayer, of course, will take the hit under Barkey's regime, because what Barkey will do is, as he busts the union, the pension fund will go under the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, a federal government agency, which will then preside over cuts in the health care and pensions of these retired workers. We'll be back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. Now, Chrysler, if Chrysler is to survive, it's because it's going to come under the control of Fiat. Well, the center of Fiat, of course, is Turin, Italy. That is to say, the northeast corner of Italy, Piedmont, circled by the Alps. Beautiful place, great city. However, the management of Fiat are total degenerates. And indeed, if you lived in Turin, as I did for a year, you found that the entire working class of Turin was mobilized against the Fiat management because they are a gang of degenerates. In those days, it was Gianni Agnelli, the family that owns Fiat. This guy, he was a member of the International Jet Set, right, with Porfirio Ruby Rosa and the Aga Khan and so forth back in the 1950s. And the story was that he had indulged in cocaine to the point that he'd burned out the inside of his nostrils and had to replace it with some kind of a silver lining for his nostrils. So this was then going to be the person who made the great decisions for a large industrial corporation. They had a competent management in the form of Valletta, even though he was a brute when it came to the unions, but then it just simply became a group of a blasé cafe society jet set degenerates. So the Fiat management is incompetent, and their anti-union, union-busting, wage-gouging proclivities are just too famous to be ignored. So what kind of a future is that? Chrysler must be nationalized immediately. Get rid of Nardelli, get rid of the hedge fund hyenas, get Cerberus out of there, if they're trying to loot the place, which is what they're doing. And do the same thing for General Motors. Those assembly lines must be saved. Without those assembly lines, the U.S. becomes indefensible. It becomes a banana republic. We've heard about banana republic. If you don't have an auto industry with some assembly lines going, you are a banana republic, whatever the political overtones look like. With that, it would essentially mark the destruction of the industrial base in the Midwest around the Great Lakes. The U.S. would then become a ravaged hulk, a pathetic wreck, a derelict floating on the waters of political adventure and world economic depression. It would be ripe for national collapse, and we've even got some other forms of hyenas coming around talking in those terms. Who's doing it? Who is superintending the destruction of General Motors and Chrysler? Steve Ratner, alias Ratner the Rat. Ratner of Quadrangle Hedge Fund is a former New York Times reporter. My God. He was a New York Times reporter, so he's a press whore. And now he is the head of Obama's auto task force. Could anything be more obscene? Could anything unveil better than this, the intellectual, moral, and political bankruptcy of the Obama regime, that they put a former New York Times reporter in charge of destroying these industries that have been built up by three, four, five generations of workers over the period of 100 years, who with trade union struggles have gotten their living standard up to the point that they were able to lift the rest of the U.S. working class to decent levels. And Ratner the Rat, of course, is corrupt. Ratner the Rat should be in jail. Ratner the Rat has been exposed as being part of a pay-to-play scheme. Whatever was done to Blagojevich, and whatever it was, should be done to Ratner, because he's in the same league. And, of course, this is the entire clique around Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and the rest of them. It's the entire Democratic Party pay-to-play mafia. In the case of Ratner the Rat, it was a pension fund in the state of New York where Quadrangle Hedge Fund that he was running wanted to come in and loot it, and therefore they had to pay various kinds of fees to all kinds of interested parties. That's the guy. Ratner the Rat is presiding over the destruction of five generations of work to build up those assembly lines. And again, the Studebaker engines on the B-17 and all the rest of it, all of this stuff goes out the window if you don't have an automobile industry. We've already got record unemployment in terms of people receiving unemployment benefits, more than 6 million currently. The latest unemployment news, 640,000 new claims for unemployment. We've got 10% of the United States is now on food stamps, including 3 million in Texas. 10% of all homes are in foreclosure. And despite Obama's promises on foreclosure, and despite the money that the Obama regime is now paying out of the TARP to Countrywide, to the successors of gangster Angelo Mozzillo over there at Countrywide, there's been an 80% increase in foreclosures over recent months. How about that? So this is a world economic depression of unprecedented severity. It's a world depression, and in the middle of all this now, we get the stress test on the banks. Now, this is being announced even as we're recording the program. This is the report on what Geithner had promised, that the 19 top zombie banks would be subjected to a stress test. Now, the report we were getting about this is that the way they're doing it is the following. Geithner's goal is to feed the viable local and regional banks into the greedy jaws of J.P. Morgan Chase, first of all, but to some extent also Citibank and Bank of America. The model for this is what happened to Washington Mutual, WAMU. Last September, WAMU, a viable institution, was seized and delivered on a platter to Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan Chase. This was done by the corrupt and criminal Sheila Bair of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, who, by some strange coincidence, is still in power under Barkey. She has gone from Bush to Barkey in the same way that Gates and a few others have. So That's the story on Waymo. Now, what they want to do is do that now to other relatively viable regional and local banks. So the idea is that the stress test has been administered. It's very, very rough on the local regional banks and very, very soft on the big zombie banks, the top five, six zombie banks, money center banks. So we can expect that Geithner will attempt to break up the viable banks and feed them to the ones that are most bankrupt. In other words, here again, unfailingly, the Obama regime does the opposite of what would be rational, the opposite of what is conducive to human survival and the survival of civilization. And, of course, everything that Obama does is designed to exalt speculative, bubble economy, bloated, cancerous, fictitious, speculative values. Rule the roost with Obama, the Wall Street puppet. Now, of course, the banks are claiming that they're in relatively good shape. Well, the reason for this is now the mark-to-market rule has been suspended, and the banks can now mark-to-model. That would be the Black-Scholes model for their derivatives. And, of course, with the Black-Scholes and related models used for valuation of derivatives, once you get to mark-to-model, you can cook it any way you want. In the background, there are people who are not fooled. These are speculators now. These are hyenas of a different type. They're not fooled by the bank profits. They know that the results announced by Bank of America and some others are basically a fraud. Same thing for Goldman Sachs and indeed Morgan Stanley, although their result was not so great. The point is that all of these institutions have issued bonds. And what's going on, with not very much publicity happening, is that there is massive shorting of the bonds, corporate bonds issued by these zombie banks. This is going on in the background. And as those zombie bank bonds are driven down by the process of shorting, it essentially reflects a conviction that a lot of these banks are eventually going to be seized by the federal government. And indeed, that's what should happen, but it should happen this afternoon. It's Friday afternoon, Sheila Bair. How come you haven't seized the zombie banks? Why are you breaking the law? We'll be back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Radio. This is Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. And let me take this opportunity to call your attention to the authoritative books on Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. First edition published 1 year ago this month in advance of the Pennsylvania primary, and the profile of Obama has been massively confirmed, unfortunately. And that is then supplemented by Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. Both of these, Obama the Postmodern Coup and Obama the Unauthorized Biography, two separate books with a completely different content, different emphasis, available from Amazon.com, having sold very well in Germany, very well in Japan, and an Italian edition in the works that will combine the best of both. And let me also urge you in terms of the false flag now, there's no doubt what happened on 9/11. If you want to know what happened on 9/11 in the time leading up to it, 9/11 synthetic terror made in USA from Amazon.com. And we've also got the imminent publication now on paper of Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History, which is largely based on a study I did of the U.S. and world economies in 1998, 1999, the snapshot taken then, I think unfailingly identified the causes of the current world economic depression, and that's then supplemented with a wealth of recent material that goes into how you get out of a depression right now. How you get deeper into the depression is the Geithner stress test. Again, the goal here is to feed the relatively viable regional banks to the totally bankrupt money center banks, especially the big three, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Bank of America. We can call this the fairy tale of Tiny Tim and the 19 zombies. Not exactly all of the 19 big banks that they're looking into are zombies, but the top 7, 8, 9, 10 certainly are. And I think the idea would be within that universe of the 19 larger banks that the Treasury is forcing to go through this procedure, the smaller and more viable ones, the ones that are less loaded with deadly derivatives, will be fed into the jaws and the maw of those who are less viable. So we've got the IMF meeting here this weekend, the G7 meeting today, the G20 meeting. Geithner is still pushing that locomotive theory, right? The old Carter Mondale locomotive theory, which says the U.S. is debasing the currency like mad. Europe has to do the same. Japan has to do the same. Nobody in Europe wants to do that. And, of course, everybody recognizes the one really effective recovery program that's going on is the Chinese one, because the Chinese one is based on real productive investment in tangible physical economic goods, not propping up speculative values, not trying to save zombie banks, but building things, building maglev, building rail, building healthcare, building hospitals in local communities. That's the Chinese one. That's a New Deal program, and it's going to be effective. And the degeneracy of the U.S. political system is reflected in the inability of the current regime, or indeed the opposition, to propose something along the lines of the Chinese program, which people in Wall Street basically know will work. They all say, oh, we're all hoping for China to lift the world out of depression, because the rest of this stuff basically won't work. Now, we've also got some scandals that are going on. We have the bankruptcy manager of AIG, the guy called Liddy, Ed Liddy, worked for Goldman Sachs. And, of course, then he was brought in as a dollar-a-year man to save AIG, well, to save it, to break up AIG, and in particular to neutralize that hedge fund that AIG had in London, which issued $3 trillion of derivatives, including credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, and the rest of it. And here you see the whole crisis in a microcosm. The roots of the crisis are hedge funds and derivatives. You want to get out of the crisis, ban hedge funds, outlaw derivatives, destroy the derivatives that exist, shut down the hedge funds that exist. You will be well on your way to getting out of the crisis if you can supplement that with some actual recovery policies. But what we find is that under the TARP, the AIG, of course, has received $160 billion with chits in for another $200 billion or so. Liddy is a former employee of Goldman Sachs, successfully convoyed between $10 and $15 billion of AIG bailout money to Goldman Sachs. So Goldman Sachs is cashing in all around. And you'll remember, of course, that Goldman Sachs, more than any other financial institution, financed Barkey's seizure of power. That is, the Obama presidential campaign received more through bundling at Goldman Sachs than any other bank or financial institution. We've also got a scandal at the Bank of America. This is actually funny. We've got Lewis. You'll remember Lewis, Ken Lewis, the head of Bank of America, zombie banker. And this is the aggressive apologist. He's the publicity man saying, we bank executives demand big money. We want our millions of dollars in compensation packages. Turns out that when Merrill Lynch was about to blow under Thain, that was last September, October, Merrill Lynch was about to blow up. Paulson, the Bush Secretary of the Treasury, Hanky Panky Paulson that we followed at the time, Hanky Panky was joined by helicopter Ben Bernanke, who is still at the Federal Reserve, and they told Lewis, you know, you're going to absorb Merrill Lynch. Don't you dare tell your board or your shareholders or the public how bankrupt Merrill Lynch is, because you're going to take it and you're going to like it and you're going to shut up about it. So here we have an interesting scandal. The Paulson side, of course, is interesting, but the Bernanke side is even more interesting because Bernanke is in there. Time to impeach Bernanke. Time to impeach Bernanke. And, of course, the way to do it, we have to hope that all of the disgruntled shareholders of Bank of America who have been forced to eat the huge losses coming from Merrill Lynch and their derivatives, that those shareholders will take it out on Bernanke with lots and lots of lawsuits and other actions, publicity actions, that will begin to so besmirch the name of the Federal Reserve that the nationalization of the Federal Reserve will come into view, so that people like Bernanke will not be able to run wild. And generally, accountability for Paulson, accountability for Bernanke. And then, of course, once you've said the two of them, was Tiny Tim Geithner in the room at the time? Chances are he was. So there we have the panoply of financial events. And we're going into a depression. Let's just go through what should be done with auto. Again, nationalize General Motors, nationalize Chrysler. Kick out the hedge fund hyenas, the various Nardellis. Get rid of that Fritz Henderson. He's obviously a big step down from Wagoner. Wagoner was obviously ousted because he wanted to fight for some form of industrial capitalism in this country. Henderson is a yes man and tool of Obama, who's going to go along with anything. Get the hedge funds out of there. Get all the derivatives wiped out. Nationalize these companies. Put in competent industrial engineers. We can recommend some if they want to know the names of a few. Get in some people who have actually had experience in running large-scale industrial complexes like shipyards and things like this. Then what you've got to do, go back to the reconversion plans elaborated by the United Auto Workers in the decade after World War II, and look at the things that these companies, these assembly lines, could manufacture that are vitally needed. That would be space program equipment, nuclear reactors, tractors, maglev rail, local urban mass transit, things like this, and get them going producing those things. Give them all the debt moratorium and the derivatives wipeout in the meantime. We'll be back in a minute.